let's talk about a couple of things that we hit on a little bit last week as a bit of an introduction. We discussed last week how Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, he's clearly taking aim at who in the Sermon on the Mount? The Pharisees, right? And that, I think, is important and helpful, because when you understand that and then you read through the rest of the Bible, you understand better what was going on in Jesus' life and why, when you read through the Bible, it talks about what they were doing, right? They were and what was happening. They were losing control, right? They were losing their grip on the people. And because of that, because he was challenging ultimately their what? Their authority, right? And their control of people, they started to do what? They were what? I heard it. Sin. But what were they trying to do with Jesus? Kill him, plot against him, right? They were, you continue to read through all these verses, they were constantly trying to plot against him, to destroy him. And it ultimately led to them doing what? They bribed his closest companion, right? They had an illegal arrest. And when they arrested him, they had an illegal trial. Why did they have an illegal trial? When did they arrest him? What time of day was it? Night. When are you supposed to, under Jewish law, when can you have a trial at night? When are you supposed to have it? During the day. When did they have the trial? Night. Okay. Then they brought in all these false witnesses, right? And then they ultimately sent them over to the Romans. And then they had a chance. The Romans were like, we don't see anything. And so the Romans were trying to get Jesus released. And so they came up with this idea. And the idea was, look, we can release Jesus or this guy who's terrible. And what did the Jews say? Release Barabbas. Okay. I want you to understand the length they went to, right, to just get rid of Jesus. Okay. The length they went to get rid of him. Why? Because he was destroying their control over everything. All right. And so when we go through the Bible, all right, turn to Matthew chapter 9, for example. Turn to Matthew chapter 9. You see, as we go through the New Testament, and we'll just look at a couple verses together here, you see this constant struggle they were having with him. And in Matthew chapter 9, beginning in verse 9, you see Jesus, and he's with Matthew, and he says, "Follow me," in verse 9. And then 10, Jesus sat at the table in the house, and the tax collectors and sinners came to sit with him, and the Pharisees are just, I mean, they're beside themselves, right? And they sit down, and the Pharisees saw it where Jesus was sitting, and they said to the disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" Right? They just, I mean, they can't even understand what is going on with him. And then flip over to Matthew chapter 12, verse 1 and 2, right? And they're here in Matthew chapter 12, verse 1 and 2. And Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. The disciples were hungry. They began to pluck heads of grain to eat. And the Pharisees saw it. And they look at, and they say to Jesus, "Look at what your disciples are doing. It's not lawful for them to do this on the Sabbath," right? They are just beside themselves. And Jesus explains and talks to them about this. It apparently was sufficient for them. They don't, or at least Matthew doesn't record their reaction. And then in verse 9, they depart. They're in a synagogue, and there's a man with a withered hand. And they ask him, saying, "Is it lawful to heal someone on the Sabbath?" And they're asking him this so that they can do what? It says in the end of verse 10. So that they can do what? They don't even want him to heal someone, because they just want to accuse him, right? And so, what's he do? He heals the person, and it says at the end of verse 14 that they went out to plot against him so that they could destroy him, Right? They don't even want them to help people. They don't want them to help sinners. They don't want them to help tax collectors. They don't want them to heal people because they just are trying to get rid of them, right? Like, this is the environment that's going on. If you flip over to Matthew chapter 15, the scribes and the Pharisees who were from Jerusalem, they came, they said, "Why do your disciples transgress the tradition of the elders, for they do not wash their hands when they eat bread?" There's this constant pull and push with the Pharisees and the scribes with Jesus, right? They are constantly after Jesus, okay? So that's the environment that is going on. But at least in what we have in the Bible, it sort of all started with the Sermon on the Mount, all right? And in the Sermon on the Mount, as we talked last week, the Sermon on the Mount is, some have argued, the Sermon on the Mount was just a collection of sermons, not one sermon. And hopefully you started to see last week as we walked through really verses or chapter 5 and 6, you saw the harmony in 5 and 6 of the themes that Jesus had. You'll see that as we look in 7. You'll continue to see the harmony of those themes in 5, 6, and 7, where I believe it is just one sermon. But the reason some say that perhaps it was a collection of sermons is they'll look to Luke. And in Luke chapter 6, it is some of the same teachings. And they'll say, well, look, Luke talked about the Sermon on the Mount. He talked about it in Luke chapter 6. It's in Luke 6, verses 20 through 49. And they say it was really short. And so that was really what Jesus did. It was just a short sermon. How many of you in here have preached before? Raise your hand. Have any of you taught at more than one congregation? And when you did you use the same sermon twice? Be honest. All right. Is it possible Jesus used the same sermon twice? So that's not really a good view of looking at Luke 6 and saying, well, that was a shorter sermon, and so Matthew 5, 6, and 7 isn't the same, you know, is a different, you know, is a collection of sermons. Luke 6, when you read it in the context, I'm not sure is the exact account of what Matthew 5, 6, and 7 is, right? And what we know when we look at Matthew 5, 6, and 7, I've taught classes before, and I come back and anchor off the Sermon on the Mount a lot, because Jesus talks about these concepts throughout his teachings all the time. And so we see the concept of forgiveness that Jesus talks about in Matthew chapter 6. He talks about it in Matthew 18. He addresses marriage and divorce and adultery in Matthew 19. He talked about it in Matthew chapter 5. He talks about, in Matthew 6, not laying up for yourself treasures in heaven. He talks about having a good eye, doing well with the money that you have to help others. And he talks about not serving material things. And he talks about that in Matthew 19 and 20. And so the Sermon on the Mount is a collect, it is a bunch of matters that the people needed to hear. But guess what? It's not one and done. He keeps teaching those throughout his ministry. And so he comes back and he does it in Matthew 18 and 19 and 20. And he does it throughout his 3 years of teaching. And so that, in my mind, is just he's going to continue to teach to the people about the things they need to hear. And as we said last week, all those things he taught are the things that are amazingly still very relevant for us today. And so that brings us to really Matthew chapter 7, verse 1. And if Matthew chapter 7, verse 1 isn't the most quoted verse in the Sermon on the Mount, it may be the most quoted verse in the whole New Testament, maybe the most quoted verse in the entire Bible. You may have people you know who can quote Matthew chapter 7, verse 1, and they may not even be able to quote any other verse in the Bible. But it is amazing how many people know that Matthew chapter 7, verse 1 says, "Judge not," and I still know the old King James Version, "Judge not, lest you be judged," right? People love that verse, right? They love to quote it. What's the problem when most of the time when people quote Matthew chapter 7, verse 1, judge not lest you be judged? What is most often the problem with that? It's taken out of context, right? And as we all know, when we study the Bible, context is really, really important. And so we need to look at the context of what does Matthew chapter 7, verse 1, what is the context, right? And so let's look at what the context is, and then we will better understand what is Matthew chapter 7, verse 1, what does it really mean? What is Jesus really saying? So this is the context, right? The context is Jesus starts a sermon, and he says, blessed are you, privileged are you, fortunate are you, right? Not because of anything that you have externally. You're blessed, you're fortunate, you're privileged because of your relationship with God. And because of that relationship with God, you need to go out into the world and you need to show everyone how privileged you are, right? You need to go out and show everyone how privileged you are. And just like salt penetrates meat, and just like light penetrates darkness, you need to go do the same thing with the world. You need to go out into the world and show them how privileged you are. And that's what I want you to do. And then he says, now, let me clear up a misconception about me. I am not here to destroy the law. I am here to address a misconception. And that misconception is that I'm here to destroy the law. I'm actually here to clear up a problem. And the problem is what? What's the problem? The traditions of the Pharisees. The Pharisees have taken their traditions and distorted the law. And I'm here to clear it up. Okay? And so in Matthew chapter 5, verse 20, he says, your righteousness needs to exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees. So if you're still at Matthew chapter 15, look at Matthew chapter 15. There's the last one, the last verse we look at. In Matthew chapter 15, in verse 2, when the scribes and the Pharisees complained to Jesus, they said, why do your disciples transgress the law? Is that what it says? Well, what's it say? Why do your disciples transgress the traditions of the elders? Isn't that interesting? Has anyone ever noticed that before? Okay. What is Jesus' answer? Why, in verse 3, why do you transgress the commandments of God because of your what? Traditions. Why do you transgress the commandments of law of your because of your traditions? Okay? And then he says, God commanded, honor your father and mother, and he who curses your father and mother, let him be put to death. But you say, whoever says to his father and mother, whatever profit you might receive from me is a gift to God, then he need not honor his father and mother. What had they done? They had taken a commandment of God and changed it. And so he says to them, you have made the commandment of God of no effect by your traditions. Right? And he calls them hypocrites in verse 7. And then he quotes Isaiah. And what does Isaiah say? What did he prophesy? He says, these people, they're going to draw near to me with their mouth. They're going to honor me with their lips. Right? What's that mean? They're going to, on the outward appearances, they're going to look like they're serving me. But what? What's he say? Their what is far from me? Their hearts. Is this not sounding exactly what Jesus was dealing with on the Sermon on the Mount? Is it not echoing what he was dealing with on the Sermon on the Mount? And in vain they worship me, teaching as what? Doctrine, the what? Commandments of men. All right, so he hits it right on in Matthew 15, what was going on, okay? And so we're back to Matthew chapter 5, verse 20. When he says your righteousness needs to exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, What was their righteousness? Their righteousness was this outward appearance, right? That was their righteousness. Their righteousness was this outward appearance. They were doing things to impress others, right? They were following their traditions, okay? And he was saying, that's their righteousness. Your righteousness needs to be what? It needs to be inward. It needs to be based on what's inside. It needs to follow not traditions, not their traditions, not what they were teaching as doctrine, their commandments, but God's commandments. That's your righteousness. And if that's your righteousness, which exceeds theirs, then you can enter the kingdom of heaven. And that's what Jesus was teaching. And so then he goes to work. And he goes to work and he says, you have heard it said. What had they heard said? What had they heard said? What they had heard said was what had been taught as doctrine, the commandments of men. What was that? What the Pharisees had taught as doctrine, commandments of men. That's what they had heard said. And then he says, but I say to you what? God's commandment. Okay? So that's what Jesus starts doing. You have heard it said, what the Pharisees had taught as doctrine, but was really just their commandments. And he says, but I say to you, this is the commandments of God. Okay? It is brilliant teaching. Okay? And we often talk about how great Jesus was as a teacher. It is brilliant teaching. And he's like, this is what they say, this is what I say. This is their teaching, this is God's teaching. And he just goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Right? And so then he takes on all these topics. All these topics that the people needed to hear. And those are the same topics that we all still need to hear today. Anger and murder, adultery, divorce, oaths, retaliation, enemies. And he's telling them, you need to think about, when you think about murder, it's not just that act, it's what's in your heart. And so it is the anger that causes and manifests itself into the act. It's not just the act of adultery, it is the lust you have in your heart, and he's trying to get them away from the thinking they have all had, and that thinking they had has been influenced by the Pharisees that have placed the traditions and distorted the commandments of God. And then in Matthew chapter 6, he really goes to work. In Matthew chapter 6, he goes to work because he's going to talk about these elements of religion, right? And what are they? What's he address? Prayer. What else? Giving. One more. Fasting. And he says, don't be like them. Who's the them? All right, he actually refers to them as three, he calls them three different names. What are the names? Hypocrites. I'm sorry, I didn't hear it. Yeah, it's the scribes and the Pharisees, but he calls them three different names. Hypocrites. There's one other word, he uses it once. Heathens. And then he basically refers to those two again, and he calls it they or them. Okay? So he calls them hypocrites three times, heathens once, and then he says them or they, referring back to kind of those words seven times. Okay? Make no mistake, he is, you know, my grandfather would call it taking them behind the woodshed. All right? He is taking them behind the woodshed. Because what were they doing? When they were giving, it was like, you know, they were making sure everyone was seeing it or hearing it fall into the collection plate. When they were praying, what were they doing? They're going to the synagogue to make everyone made sure they saw him standing up, or going to the streets to make sure everyone saw him standing up. And it was these very long prayers that he refers to as vain what? And then when they were fasting, when they decided to fast, what were they doing with their appearance? They were making themselves look even sicker, right? Sad countenance, right? And so Jesus says, no, when you go give, don't let even your right hand know what your left hand's giving. When you go to pray, do it in secret so that no one even hears you praying. And when you're fasting, if you decide to fast, clean your appearance up so no one on the street even knows you're fasting. Why? Because you're doing it in secret. Why are you doing it in secret? Because you're not doing it for anyone else. Who are you doing it for? God. And if you're doing it for God, and you're doing it for the right reason, in your heart, who's going to reward you? God. Okay. What has Jesus just done? From Matthew chapter 5, verse 17 to Matthew 6, verses 18. What has Jesus just done? Put it in context of Matthew chapter 7, verse 1. What has he just done? He has just judged them. He has just judged them. So, what does Matthew chapter 7, verse 1, judge not lest you be judged, does that mean we're not supposed to judge? In that context, is that what that means? So he must be addressing something. But the first thing you have to realize is what he is not prohibiting judgment. Okay? Clearly he's not, because he just spent, you know, Matthew 5, 17 through Matthew 6, 18, doing a lot of judging. Okay? That you can't overlook that context. Okay? So it's really hard to read Matthew chapter 7, verse 1 in context and say, well, Jesus, we're not supposed to judge. Well, he just did a whole lot of it. He just did a whole lot of it. All right? So we need to understand, what does Matthew 7, verses 1 through 6 mean? If we keep reading Matthew chapter 7, what else does he say? In verse 6, he says, hey, and we'll look at this in a moment in more detail. He says in verse 6, he said, hey, those dogs and swine, right? Those people who don't respect the gospel, right? Don't waste your time with them. What do you have to do in order to make that decision? You have to judge who is a dog and a swine, right? You continue on through Matthew chapter 7, and we'll look at this next week. It talks about beware of false who? False teachers. How do you determine who a false teacher is? What do you have to do? You have to judge. All right? So we're commanded to stay away from false teachers. How do we do that if we don't judge? Okay? So he is not prohibiting judging. All right? But there is clearly an issue. All right? And you all know Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 through 5. And it talks, if we continue to read, it talks about someone having a beam or a plank in their eye and judging someone that has a speck in theirs. What was the problem? What were the people doing? You all know it, so don't make me pull it out of you, because I will. We can sit here for 17 more minutes. They're being hypocritical. All right, what were they doing? They're being hypocritical. What else? They weren't judging fairly. Why were they being hypocritical? They weren't judging fairly. Why? Okay, judging by traditions. What else? Righteous judgment. Okay, yep, everyone's right on it. Taking the focus on themselves. Did they have a problem? Did they individually have an issue? They apparently had a big issue, like a beam in their eye or a plank in their eye. And they were going, and so what was the issue? They individually had an issue. They individually had a sin, and they were going and saying, you got a problem. And so what kind of judging was that? They were doing very self-righteous judgment. They had these types of attitudes where they were going and judging one another, but they had a big problem themselves. And that was the issue Jesus was dealing with. Okay? So think back to, this wasn't just interesting verses we were looking at. Think about those Pharisees. Those Pharisees, why are you hanging out with chiefs? Why are you hanging out with tax collectors and sinners? Why are your disciples eating on the Sabbath? Why are you healing people on the... Was that not hypocritical? Right? Think about all the sins that were going on with the Pharisees, and yet they were pointing to all the problems that they were seeing without looking internally. Okay? And Jesus, remember, a lot of what Jesus is doing is correcting issues that people had. Why did the people have those issues? He was changing their thinking. Why was he having to change their thinking? Because they were following what they believed was doctrine. That doctrine, though, had been distorted. It had been distorted because they had been listening to who? The the Pharisees who had distorted it, right? And so he's like, you're judging one another, and you're judging one another, right? And you got, and you're doing it incorrectly. You're doing it incorrectly because you're pointing out someone's flaws and you got your own problems. All right? And that's what he's pointing out. So he's saying, don't judge that way. That's not the way you're supposed to do it. Right? And he warns them in verse 2. He warns them in verse 2. If you judge that way, what's going to happen? You just established a measuring stick, right? And that's what God's going to use on you. All right? So if you're going to judge that harshly, if you're going to judge that way, God's going to take that way that you judge and use it to judge you. So that's the warning. That's the warning that he's given them. I want to spend a little bit more time on this. Any comments or questions on that before? Yeah, right. You're gonna get the way that you judge someone is the exact same way that God's gonna judge you. The same standard will get judged back to you. Okay. We spend a lot of time looking at 3, 4, and 5. We talk about beams and planks. And to be clear here, right, a sin is a sin. So a beam or a speck doesn't matter. I want to be very clear about that. And Jesus isn't making a distinction between a big sin and a little sin. A sin's a sin. And I think you all are smart enough to know that, right? The more I've studied this, the more I have learned to appreciate verse 5, okay? And there are certain verses in the Bible that I've learned over the years, give me a little bit of pause. I kind of, I think about them more and more. James 3:1 kind of comes to mind. Who knows James 3:1? My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that you will receive what? Stricter judgment. I am sure all of our elders know Hebrews 13:17. We should all know it. One, because it's actually speaking to us, but it certainly you will appreciate the weight on their shoulders when you read Hebrews 13:17. Obey those who rule over you and be submissive, for they watch out for your souls, and they must do what? Give an account. They must give an account for them. Galatians 6:1, though, talks about one of our responsibilities. All of our responsibilities. It says, brethren, if a man is overtaken in trespasses, you who are spiritual should restore such a one. Okay? So, again, if a man is overtaken in trespasses, you who are spiritual should restore such a one. And when you look at Matthew chapter 7, verses 5, Jesus is actually saying, this is what you need to do. This is how you actually judge righteously. And so he explains it in verse 5. And you need to keep into mind that the objective there is Galatians chapter 6, verse 1, or James chapter 5, verses 19 and 20. The objective is that you're trying to restore a soul. Right? That's the objective. And James talks about it as when you restore a soul or you bring someone back, that you cover, anyone remember what that says? A multitude of sins. You cover a multitude of sin. And so Jesus says, this is actually how you judge righteously. First, what you need to do is do what? You need to look at yourself. You need to look at yourself, and you need to take care of yourself. And when you've taken care of yourself, when you've removed that plank from your eye, then you're in a position to go help your brother. And the objective is to go help your brother. And I think that's often lost in these verses, that the objective is to try to help your brother. Okay?
Also says in the spirit of gentleness.
I'm sorry?
In the spirit of gentleness.
In the spirit of gentleness, yeah. The attitude, yeah, the attitude that you have. Yeah, no, this is a good point, Vic. So, yeah, the attitude that you have, because that was clearly, you know, clearly part of the issue too, was it was a self-righteous judgment. It was the attitude that they had. It was the, you know, holier-than-thou attitude that they have in which they were going about judging. And so, yeah, it's a great point. It was the attitude that they had around it. Any other? Yep, Gary. Yeah, so for those who weren't able to hear, Gary's point was we should look to the Lord in this process, and when you're looking to others instead of looking to the Lord, and look, one part of this is we are not perfect, right? And so there's a risk that and don't misunderstand me, there's a risk that you look at this and say, well, this suggests that I need to be sinless to go help someone. And that's not what this is saying. You need to be, I'm going to use the word blameless. And I'm going to use the word blameless the way that it's used in Titus as one of the qualifications for an elder. We've talked here before, we should all strive to meet the qualifications of an elder, even if we're, you know, not qualified to be an elder. Those are great characteristics to try to achieve. And, you know, the concept of trying to be blameless is the objective that we should try to strive for. It's that idea that you try to live blameless, but I think in this context it is, if you have a clear issue in your life, you need to clear it up if you're going to go try to help, you know, before you're pointing out someone else's issue. And I think, as Vic said, you know, you're doing it with the right attitude. Okay, all right. I can't leave all of the rest of this to David, so let me speed through it. Okay, we kind of hit on this. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on it. In verse 6, the point here is, look, if there are those who are hostile to the gospel, they're not willing to accept it, then Jesus is giving us permission to not spend time trying to teach who he refers to as dogs and swine, individuals who do not have a receptive heart. He is giving us permission to make that judgment and move on. Okay, and that is what he's saying. All right, so let's hop to the second half of the verses we have this morning, which is verses 7 through 12. So the first part of chapter 7 is really, in a lot of ways, a continuation of Jesus addressing some of the challenges and issues that were going on with the scribes and the Pharisees, and by extension, the issues that the people were having because they had been taught by them, and how that had manifested itself into their behavior. Okay, he is, in a lot of ways, returning here to some of the conversation that he had had in chapter 6. And so he's returning to talk about prayer that he had covered in Matthew chapter 6, verses 9 through 13. And he is returning to talk to them a little bit about relying on God, trusting God. And that is similar to some of the things we talked about last week in Matthew chapter 6, verses 25 through 34, which was about do not worry, right? Do not let your mind get distracted. And he said, don't be distracted, as a reminder, don't be distracted, because if God takes care of lesser creatures, he's going to take care of you. Anxiety never got us anywhere, right? Doesn't make us younger, taller, you know, more handsome or pretty. And all worry does is it demonstrates a lack of faith in God. And so he's in a lot of ways coming back to these concepts. And so he starts with prayer. And these words in chapter 7, verse 7, he says, ask, seek, and knock. And these words in the Greek are present tense words. They are continual actions. They don't mean you do it once and you're done. It means literally keep on asking, keep on seeking, keep on knocking. You do it every day and you continue to do it. Keep on asking, keep on seeking, keep on knocking. And he wants you to understand that you need to have confidence, and you should have confidence because of the guarantee that that God is promising. What's the guarantee? Look at the verses. In verse 7, if you ask, it might be given to you. Is that what Jesus says? It will. Verse 8, everyone who asks what? Okay. Then he says, seek. Keep on seeking because you might find it. Is that what it says? Okay. So you get the point. Seek and you will find it. Verse 8, he who seeks finds it. All right, knock. If you keep on knocking, it will be open to you. You will, it will be open to you. So the point he's making here is God wants us to continue in prayer daily. Keep asking, keep seeking, keep knocking, and to trust that God will respond. Now, is he going to respond the way that we're asking? Maybe not, right? But that's up to God. True faith is he will respond, and genuine faith is to trust that he will. He's going to do it on his timetable, and he's going to do it the way that he thinks is best for you. But genuine faith is it will happen. And to trust it will happen. And as long as you're asking the right way, then you need to have faith that God will respond. And so he says to them, right, keep asking, keep seeking, keep knocking. And then he goes on and he says, and you need to, if we continue with the thought process, keep on trusting God, okay? Keep on trusting God. And he uses very similar to the way he says, you don't need to worry. You know how God takes care of all those little things? He's going to take care of you, right? And he kind of twists it around. He's like, hey, you know how you take care of your kids? Then why don't you think God wouldn't also take care of you and all the things that you ask for? And he says, hey, if your son asks you for bread, do you give him stone? If he asks for a fish, do you give him a serpent? Of course not. So, of course, God, who is much greater than you, is going to take care of you. So just keep on trusting him, all right? And he will. You should have trust that he's going to take care of you. So keep on praying, keep on trusting, and then he says, and then I want you to continue to minister or teach others. And this is where you all know this. This is the golden rule, right? And so he says in verse 12, whatever you want men to do, do also to them. And think about this as when you're out there as salt and light, right? You're out there penetrating the environment, right? Showing them your good works. Remember, you're persistently ministering. So when you're out doing unto others that you are teaching, and he wants you to do it persistently. He wants you to do it persistently. And the most interesting thing to me about this verse is how he ends it. And I've never noticed it before. How does he end it? What does he say? For this is the law of the prophets. For this is the law of the prophets. He is making it clear that he is not there to destroy the law. He is telling them, you need to go out and do unto others as you would want to be done, because this is the law. Right? He is an amazing teacher. He's an amazing teacher. He constructed a sermon that was fantastic. I mean, when you dig into this and think about the way he has booked in this entire discussion, I'm not here to destroy the law, and then he's walked them all the way through this, and he ends and says, you need to do unto others as I have you to do unto you, because this is the law. Boy, he has put together a fantastic, fantastic sermon. So hope this has been helpful. We'll continue with we'll wrap up Sermon on the Mount next Sunday.